Radio Prague News.
Czechs have been going to the polls on the first day of a two-day national election. A final debate on Thursday between the leaders of the country's two strongest parties was seen by some 1.4 million viewers. The President of the European Parliament has stated that it is the responsibility of all 25 EU member states to try and ratify the EU Constitution. Polling stations have opened throughout the Czech Republic on the first day of a two-day national election. The election is widely expected to be a close contest between the ruling Social Democratic Party and the opposition right-of-center Civic Democrats. Earlier, polling stations opened at the Czech Republic's embassies and consulates, for example, in South and North America, as well as Australia. Around 5,000 Czechs living abroad have registered at 108 Czech embassies and consulates around the world to take part in this year's elections to the lower house. In the Czech Republic, polls close at 2 p.m. on Saturday. Both the leader of the Social Democrats, Jiří Paroubek, and the head of the opposition Civic Democrats, Mirek Topolánek, cast their votes shortly after polls opened on Friday. As well, both urged citizens to come out for the vote. Mr. Paroubek voted together with his wife in the Prague suburb of Stodulky, while Mr. Topolánek was accompanied by his family in Prague 6. Other notable figures who cast their ballots on Friday were former Prime Minister Miloš Zeman and Czech President Václav Klaus. Leading up to the election, some 1.4 million people saw a final televised debate between the leaders of the country's two strongest parties. The debate was aired by the Czech Republic's largest commercial broadcaster, TV Nova, on Thursday. Prime Minister Jiří Paroubek of the Social Democrats and the right-of-center Civic Democrats Mirek Topolánek faced off on issues that included corruption, as well as pension, tax and health reforms. Public interest in the debates increased over the final week as campaigns wrapped up. The televised debates featured on all three of the country's main broadcasters, introduced for the first time in the Czech Republic U.S.-style presidential formats that focused to a greater degree on the leaders of the two strongest political parties. In other news, the Czech crown improved to a historic high against the U.S. dollar on Friday. The currency is now valued at 21 crowns, 77 hellers to the dollar. The strong Czech economy combined with a weaker-than-expected U.S. job market is one of the causes playing a role in the record high. The President of the European Parliament, Josep Borrell, has stated that it is the responsibility of all 25 EU member states to try and ratify the EU Constitution, on hold after France and the Netherlands rejected the document in referenda last year. Speaking during a visit to Finland, Mr. Borrell said that the Parliament would push for the ratification of the document in countries that have not decided yet, among them Great Britain, Poland and the Czech Republic. In all, 15 EU countries so far have ratified the document. The EU would like to see at least 20 back the Constitution to pave the way for a special summit on the issue. And finally, the agency Interconcerts has confirmed that American singer Madonna will perform in Prague as part of her Confessions tour currently underway. Tickets for the concert to take place at Prague's Saska Arena will go on sale on June 16th. Prices will range from 3,000 to 5,000 crowns. I'm Jan Vellinger. That's the news.
This is Radio Prague, and my name is Ian Willoughby. Today, as Czechs go to the polls, we look back on this year's tough pre-election campaigning. There has been more discussion of the economy than in most elections, but what are the economic policies of the country's two biggest parties? We hear from a film festival with a difference in South Moravia, and later in the program, film student protests and the Prague Writers' Festival in this week's edition of The Arts. Many pundits in the Czech Republic agree that this year's pre-election campaigns were, at least as far as the country's two largest parties were concerned, among the most aggressive in recent memory, with the ruling Social Democrats and their biggest rivals, the opposition Civic Democrats, vying for the votes of Czechs. It's widely expected that one of these parties will form the country's next government. The campaign season was, of course, not just about these two parties, or their leaders, Jiří Paroubek and Mirek Topolánek. But in a way, it might as well have been. Jan Wellinger has details.
So what kind of a campaign was it? For the Social Democrats, an aggressive one, but also an emotional turn of events. Suffering a plummet in the ratings just a year ago, they stormed back under the leadership of the man they nicknamed the Bulldozer, Jiří Paroubek. The prime minister has pulled no punches against his election rivals. His tactics and rhetoric could see the Social Democrats win an unprecedented third term. For the Civic Democrats, it has also been a tough road. 8 years out of government, they are eager to return to power. But their leader, Mirek Topolánek, has made his campaign somewhat less personal. Even so, Jan Hartl, the head of the STEM polling agency, says,
"This election season can be described as a season full of emotions. If we compare it with the last elections, it means that now there's much more attacks, especially on personalities, rather aggressive, based on emotions, and the emotions are escalating visibly by the end of campaign. This is maybe most dramatic and most aggressive end of any campaign since 1990.
The last week alone saw the leaders of the two largest parties face off in no less than 4 televised debates. With polling banned by law 6 days ahead of voting, we can only guess at their impact. Until then, final polls by a number of agencies suggested different results, with widely differing margins of victory for both parties. A lot, theoretically, hinges on who led the more effective campaign, as well as personal preference. I asked political scientist Petr Kukielek how he viewed differences in the two parties' approach.
If we talk generally about the visual part of the campaign, I think, again, it's been interesting to take a look at the two main parties and see that the Civic Democrats are trying to appear as a team. You typically see 2 or 3 candidates together and perhaps some personalities who actually endorse them, as opposed to the Social Democrats, where you typically see a single candidate, most typically Prime Minister Paroubek. The Civic Democrats' visuals apparently try to appear more inclusive and professional, as opposed to the Social Democrats' visuals, which are trying to be more in-your-face, more direct.
If the devil is in the details, it is always difficult to guess in advance who got them right, who ultimately will reach more voters. If the Social Democrats have gone largely on the offensive, the Civic Democrats have tried to push their points by largely ignoring the attacks. Still, journalist Eric Best suggests that both parties have been guilty of falling into a quagmire that he indicates could open opportunities for some of the others.
One of the risks of such a negative campaign, especially in the final week, is that it backfires. It works against both the Social Democrats and also the right-wing party, because voters might say, this is just more of the same. We've seen it before. And you could see a spike in the votes for the Greens and the Communists, both of which are considered to an extent the protest parties. It could be that the Greens get more than the 10% that is expected, and that the Communists get more than about the 18 or 20% that is expected from them.
So here, then, is how the election seems to be shaping up. The two main parties, the Social Democrats and the opposition Civic Democrats, fighting for the largest block of voters, followed by the Communists and, somewhere behind them, the Greens and the Christian Democrats. Those are the 5, barring any major surprises, expected to get into Parliament. What kind of coalition can be formed will depend on who gets over the finish line. We'll simply have to wait and see.
Thanks, Jan. Well, you've been talking a lot there about style. What about the actual issues in the elections? Did they come across?
I would put it this way. The Prime Minister and Mr. Topolánek facing off a total of 4 times in 1 week. You couldn't help but notice, if you saw, say, more of the debates, that the issues did get across simply by repetition, and you did get an idea of where the party is do differ. Here's what political analyst Vladimir Advotákova had to say.
The election campaign here, as we said, was very aggressive. On the other hand, I would say that for the first time, the real topics and problems were discussed here in the society. For the first time, there was a strong questions about the taxation, about the reforms of the healthcare, the pension system, and so on. So, in fact, there is possibility for the voter to decide according some rationality.
And we should have some idea about whose campaign was the most effective on Saturday night. Now, perhaps more than in previous elections, specific economic policies have been high on the agenda this year. For example, the right-wing Civic Democrats are proposing the kind of revolutionary flat tax rate already introduced in some other former communist states. For their part, the left-wing Social Democrats, the biggest party in the outgoing coalition, are committed to maintaining social benefits or even increasing state support in some areas. But how realistic are such pledges? Brian Sabin has been finding out.
A year without taxes for Czech entrepreneurs. Thousands of dollars paid to parents just for having children. Up to 4 percentage points cut from the VAT tax rate. And a one-time payment to sixth graders so that they can buy their own computers. These are just some of the promises that have been handed out by the Civic and Social Democrats in the past few months. David Marek is the chief economist of Patria Online, the web service of a major Czech investment bank. He says that he's never heard such unrealistic campaign promises and thinks that they are probably just pre-election happy talk.
It's, I would say, clear populism. It's not realistic. From one point in recent months, we can see promises without any reasonable reasoning behind and economic reasoning. So it's something that could be only promise, not fulfilled.
The Civic Democrats are the ones pledging the one-year tax holiday for small and medium-sized businesses. But perhaps the most radical of their promises is a proposal for a flat 15% tax rate on corporate, income, and value-added, or VAT, taxes. David Marek says the proposal would simplify the Czech Republic's convoluted taxation system, but also says that the party's current figures are unrealistic. A 15% VAT, for example, would be a 4-point drop from current rates. And Mr. Marek says,
it's not reasonable, but I would see such a promise as a good point for next coalition. So if ODS should look at other promises of their coalition partners, they could moderate the promise of a flat tax from 15% to possibly 19-20%. But 15%, it's not a viable way for a Czech state budget.
The Social Democrats are also calling for tax reform, though with less specific proposals. They're committed to the current progressive tax system on individual incomes and are also in favor of keeping a low VAT tax on socially important products, such as diapers. Similarly, the Social Democrats promise to put more money in parents' pockets, raising the childbirth incentive to 60,000 crowns, or just shy of $3,000. The ruling party also rejects opposition plans to charge tuition at Czech universities and is committed to state-funded health care. They haven't yet said how they'll pay for all this in the long run, and David Marek isn't sure that these benefits will be affordable in the future.
It could be sustainable, but the better way will be to change the system of social benefits, because it's one of the main reasons behind current state budget deficits.
David Marek did add that the principal concern of most inventors here and abroad is that the communists do not return to power. With the Communist Party at polling at about 12%, that doesn't seem likely. But both the Civic Democrats and the Social Democrats can only expect to get about 30% of the total vote, which means whoever wins will have to build a coalition with another party. And that makes every promise subject to change.
And thank you for that report, Brian Sabin. On Saturday, we'll have a special program for you here on Radio Prague with all the latest about the elections and lots of interviews and reaction. Then on Sunday, we'll have a longer than usual news bulletin. And then on Monday, we'll have lots more analysis and reflection on the elections. We hope you can join us for those programs over the next few days. It looks like they're going to be rather dramatic. But now, from the world of politics to culture. And the Karlovy Vary International Film Festival may attract the most glamour and media attention, but it's far from being the only film festival here in the Czech Republic. Indeed, while this year's Karlovy Vary will be the 41st, the Zlín International Film Festival for Children and Youth which got underway on Sunday, is being held for the 46th time. Colleen O'Connor is in the South Moravian town of Zlín for the festival. He told me all about it on the phone.
It's kind of unusual in a festival in that it's focused very much on children. So there are, you know, literally busloads of children running around the place and going to various events. The good thing about it is as well is that when you go to see a film and there's, you know, there's 100 or 150 school children there, it actually kind of does enliven the atmosphere and the audience for a while. You actually get a real audience experience while you're looking at the film instead of just sitting in the dark.
So what about the guests at this year's Zlín International Film Festival?
Well, there are a couple of noted actors and so on. And Maximilian Schell is here. He won the Oscar in 1961 for Best Actor Oscar in 1961 for Nuremberg. And then Ivan Klima, who is like better known as a writer of novels like Love and Garbage and so on in the English-speaking world. But when he was working in the 70s, he actually worked on a number of animated films because he was banned by the communists. So he wrote a couple of scripts for The Little Mole, who's quite famous in Ireland, where I'm from. And he also wrote the screenplay for Kibernetitska Babichka, which is quite a famous, you know, animated film by Jerzy Kirnka. He surprisingly has like a lot of connections with children's film, and he's actually on the jury this year and, you know, would be one of the more sort of famous personalities, so to speak, who's actually at the festival.
Last week, Colleen, a bill aimed at increasing state support for the Czech film industry was basically thrown out, and the Czech stand at the Cannes Film Festival was closed as a protest. I know some films were pulled from the Zlín program as another protest this week. Has that cast a bit of a shadow over the festival?
Initially, it caused a lot of consternation, especially because there was fears that like basically every Czech-produced film was going to be pulled from the festival. And in the end, it was kind of resolved in that like the producers relented and allowed their films to be screened but refused to show them as part of the competitions because they feel it's not right that they should be representing the Czech Republic in, you know, international competitions when they're not receiving any support.
Colleen O'Connor there in Zlín. You can find some information about that festival in English at www.zlinfest.cz. But now on Radio Prague, it's time for the arts with Jan Wellinger and Christy Ironside.
Welcome to another edition of The Arts. I'm Jan Wellinger, joined today by Christy Ironside. Here's what we'll be looking at in the program. The first story, the state of the Czech film industry, as well as protests planned by film students, and the upcoming 16th Prague Writers' Festival. The Czech film industry is up in arms after the recent failure of a law that would have tripled the size of the state fund for the support and development of Czech cinematography. In response, students at Prague's Academy for the Performing Arts put up two creative protest displays this week, and Christy Ironside was there.
Disappointed with the vote in Parliament, students posted a sign advertising their building for sale, cheap, listing President Václav Klaus's phone number. On Thursday, they added another three banners depicting caricatures of President Klaus, the culture minister Vítězslav Jandák, and the leader of the country's largest opposition party, Mirek Topolánek, wearing sporting attire, along with the words, "Thank you guys," a typical cheer at Czech sporting events and a sarcastic response to some of the political figures who withheld their support for the law. Loudspeakers blasted the sounds of a crowd of sports fans. As they unfurled the massive banners, a tram filled with teenage cheerleaders passed by, encouraging pedestrians to vote for the Civic Democrats. The irony was not lost on the small group of students and onlookers who had gathered across the street to watch the banners go up. Students had hoped that the law would rejuvenate a film industry that has been increasingly dominated by foreign blockbuster productions rather than domestic projects. They also fear that, without state support, their training and the school itself will become obsolete. The Film Academy's dean, Michal Bregant, says that the students' disappointment is understandable.
The law was formulated to ensure a stable support for independent film production in the Czech Republic. The filmmakers in this country still have the worst and the weakest system of support for national film industry. And the students, they feel like betrayed by the political representation of the country, because they don't live in a artificial conditions. They are part of what independent Czech filmmaking is fighting for.
Along with the protests, students also issued an open letter to the government and political parties, asking for a clearer statement about their policies on Czech culture and film, as well as a more coherent explanation for the failure of the law. Film student Radovan Sibert feels that President Klaus's decision to veto the law on the grounds that film is a commercial branch of culture and should not receive public funding does not address the fact that most art films are not made for profit.
Well, it works like that in the United States, in Hollywood, but it has never worked like that in Europe. There are a few films that earn money, but the rest have to be supported by the state. I think it would be maybe interesting for him to read and to go through certain budgets of Czech films. There, hardly any of them is profitable. And I'm not saying all of the films that have been made in the last years need to exist, but some of them are good, and if there was more support, there would be maybe more better films than there are now at the moment, as you could see in the 60s.
Films then benefited from guaranteed state support, a far different situation from the one we see today. After 1989, Czech filmmakers and the entire film industry had to adapt to a new reality. To a great extent, many productions have been buoyed by public broadcaster Czech TV, but critics have complained that allotted funds have dwindled and are no longer enough. The law on cinematography would have been a much-needed boost. What does the law's failure mean to Czech filmmakers? Documentary maker and teacher Miroslav Janek puts it simply.
It means no money. It means difficulty to make films.
The approach the Czech government will adopt to resolve the crisis in the film industry ultimately depends on the outcome of this weekend's election. One thing is certain, film students will not allow their voices to remain unheard.
Christy Ironside. Now we move to our next story. After 16 years, the Prague Writers' Festival has become a well-known and highly anticipated event in the Czech cultural calendar, a chance to meet some of the most interesting authors working today. Past guests have included Irvin Welsh of Trainspotting fame, Jan Martel of Life of Pi, Michelle Welbeck, the author of Atomized, and the late U.S. critic Susan Sontag, author of Against Interpretation. Czech authors who have taken part have included well-known writers like Eva Kanturková and Ivan Klima. The festival is now back, and I had a chance to speak with its president, Michael March, ahead of the event. As before, the festival will have an overarching theme.
Well, we're focusing on Arthur Miller. There's no life without ideals. Arthur Miller was going to come to the festival in 2001. He was unwell. Of course, he passed away, and we want to honor his memory. His country, in many, many ways, he honored really the 20th century. There are ideals. You must sacrifice for the ideals. The writers who are coming have made the sacrifice, such as Schwenke, who is in prison. You know, these writers are very exciting.
As in the past, the festival should unfold in a somewhat informal manner, where visitors can hobnob with authors, if not at book signings, then following readings, or perhaps even at the venue's bar named after Becherovka, the famous Czech aperitif.
It's at the Theatre Minor. It's a very fun place. Now you can wander around between four or five floors. I'm not even sure how many floors they have. Lots of colors. Becherovka Bar, which is open for everyone. It's free. And to some, that's more of an attraction than the festival. The writers are here for 5 nights. I mean, that's the whole point. It is a very great social atmosphere. People can speak to the writers. They can have the writers sign the books. And that's what the festival does.
Along with U.S.-based Nigerian author Wole Soyinka, other writers attending will include Spanish author Jorge Semprún, Hebrew poet Aaron Shabtai, and the U.S.'s Sarah Churchwell, author of The Many Lives of Marilyn Monroe. Since the festival is dedicated to the memory of Arthur Miller, it also focuses briefly on the legacy of Marilyn Monroe, his second wife. More than anything, the star, who died under mysterious circumstances in 1962, became a symbol of an age, and, says March, her mysterious death was the progenitor of assassinations that followed in the 60s, including the killing of the Kennedys and Martin Luther King. One discussion, apparently already sold out, will deal with the mysterious circumstances of Marilyn's death. That's a must for conspiracy theorists. Unfortunately, one author who was meant to be one of the main attractions at this year's festival but had to cancel is Michael Cunningham, famous for The Hours, also made into a film with Meryl Streep and Nicole Kidman. Cunningham was slated to attend events on his newest book, Specimen Days, a haunting novel set in New York City that takes inspiration from American poet Walt Whitman. Since the festival, Mr. Cunningham was forced to cancel for personal reasons. Hopefully the author will find better circumstances to visit Prague at some time in the future, or perhaps even find time to take part in the festival's New York leg, a series of discussions titled Café Central, to be held at the New York Public Library in the Big Apple this November. I asked Michael March, a native New Yorker himself, how he felt about the Prague Writers' Festival taking Manhattan.
There's an old Chinese proverb, the longest way is the way back. We have very great ties to New York, and we want to see those ties in a cultural sense between New York and Prague. Very important. And that Prague becomes really acknowledged as really the gateway to Central Europe.
The Prague Writers' Festival begins this Sunday, June 5th, and continues through till next Wednesday. Information about tickets and book signings can all be found at www.pwf.cz. That's the art.
And that's the end of today's program here on Radio Prague. Thank you very much for joining us. Goodbye and take care.
Posloucháte Radio Praha, vysílání Českého rozhlasu do zahraničí.
Pro posluchače v Evropě vysílá Rádio Praha od 8 hodin 30 minut na frekvenci 11600 a 15710 kHz, dále od 9.30 na frekvenci 9880 kHz, od 11 hodin na frekvenci 11665 kHz, od 12.30 na frekvencích 6055 a 7345 kHz, od 13.30 na frekvenci 13580 kHz, od 15.30, 17.30, 19.30 na frekvenci 5930 kHz a také od 21 hodin na frekvenci 11600 kHz.
Posluchači v Africe si mohou české vysílání Rádia Praha naladit v 8.30 na frekvenci 15710 kHz, v 15.30 a 17.30 na frekvenci 17485 kHz, dále pak na frekvenci 9410 kHz vysíláme v 21 hodin.
Posluchači v Severní Americe uslyší Rádio Praha od 23 hodin 30 minut na frekvenci 9440 kHz, od 1 hodiny 30 minut na frekvenci 6200 kHz a od 2 hodin 30 minut na frekvencích 7345 a 9870 kHz.
Pro posluchače v Jižní Americe vysíláme od 21 hodin na frekvenci 11600 kHz, od 23 hodin 30 minut a od 1 hodiny 30 minut na frekvenci 7345 kHz.
V Asii nás zachytíte od 9.30 na frekvenci 21700.